And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. Now, tonight, we have Jeff Brown with us, who is the author of Soul Shaping. We are going to go on a little bit of a journey, I think, tonight. I think it's going to be quite interesting and hopefully a lot of fun. But we're gonna start off with talking about the apologies of the Divine Feminine. Now, Jeff is, for everybody who knows and loves him, I mean, you've completely opened and exposed yourself, you know, by writing your book, Soul Shaping, because it was just this brutally honest and raw glimpse of your own personal journey.
Yeah.
You started a group, the International Year of the Woman, and that's been on on Facebook for a few years now.
Yep.
And you wrote this just incredible, I'm not even sure, I guess a poem, really, or a letter, or whatever you want to call it, that is the apologies to the Divine Feminine. You just keep opening yourself and exposing yourself. What is that all about?
Well, I'm practicing the art of conscious masochism. No, I think on one level, just sort of psycho-emotionally, you know, one of the reasons I've called myself into this path is I have a lot of issues around exposure and attack, and so I think I'm working something out in terms of, I think, you know, historically in my own life, whenever I would kind of rise into visibility, you know, in school or in various areas of my life, and in my family for sure, I was often met with attack, and then I would shrink down and make myself small and hide my light under a bushel of shame, and that was the pattern. And I think this time I've walking into this path partly because my challenge is to be able to stay in my center, stay positive in my creativity, and continue to channel my voice. And so I think that's kind of the healing aspect to it. And I think that my message just happens to be something that at this stage of human development, this level of sort of self-revealing or self-admission is still uncomfortable. We're still overly armored and adapted in our consciousness. And so it feels like my calling, at least to some extent, is to try to put forth the okayness about self-revealing and speaking really from that interior place that is where we live, but where we often adapt our way out of because of our, you know, social constructs.
Right.
So, yeah, so I think that, you know, it is my call, but it is also a really healing movement for me internally.
So, okay, so the apologies Divine Feminine. When you read this very honest and raw letter, I mean, it sounds in the beginning and throughout that you're apologizing to women.
Yeah.
But the Divine Feminine is, I mean, we all have aspects of the Divine Feminine, just as we have aspects of the Divine Masculine within us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so much more. And then near the end, you talk about how it's, you know, embracing, you know, the Divine Goddess, that, you know, our mother, and your grandmother, that playing a large role in your life. But, you know, it's so much more than just an apology to women. I mean, it's just this.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like an apology to the open heart.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah, and you know, it's funny when it came through me, and part of the apologies reflect my own history in this lifetime, and no doubt prior lifetimes, but part of it also felt like it was sort of a transmission from the sacred battleground, from, say, like the archetypal male warrior to the open heart and to the suffering that we've experienced. And, you know, I, for the longest time, imagined it was somehow imagined kind of women, particular women that this was written to. And of course, as I look back on my history and the way in this lifetime that I have dismissed and abused my own receptivity, you know, that more vulnerable aspect of myself, I realize now that the apologies were written to that part in men as well. You know, I mean, it really is an apology to the vulnerable self, you know, that place where we really truly live, that place some of us maybe never visit or only visit 3 seconds before dying because we know we're not going to have to keep it open for too long and risk anything. And because I think ultimately that the path of the open heart is the path of human development. I mean, I think that's really the direction that we're going to go, and that we're beginning to go really slowly and incrementally. And I felt like we have to start with an apology because so much suffering has ensued when we've opened our hearts, and I think that's why so many of us prefer to be hardened than open. Yeah.
Well, it's certainly how we've been taught. I mean, not many teachers out there, or parents, or anything in our upbringing, certainly. Yeah. Unless it's in the last couple of years, have really been about opening our hearts. I mean, it's really been about protecting it. But you do talk a lot about, feeling that attack. I mean, your book definitely, were so open about love in your life and how that sort of moved and evolved you, and how sex and love kind of always gets, messy. And I'm very, very curious as to, your Vinnie Brownerini, how he...
Vinnie, hold on a second.
Okay.
Vinnie, he's feeling a little shy, which is unusual for you, you cocky son of a bitch. I can't even believe my ears. Hold on. Anyway, he's around if you want him. Vinnie's close.
Well, I am curious, how he feels about this whole...
Hold on. She wants to know how you feel. Lori...
Yes.
Vinny.
Vinny, how are you?
I'm good. I read this wussy thing that wussy that he wrote. I read it. I got one question to ask you.
Yes.
But what about you broads? you read this thing, you think it's all about us dudes, but I don't think so. Nobody's perfect on this planet. I want to know what you think about that. What's the apology you got to make, you women got to make to us men? For what we've got to put up with.
Well, yeah, that's a very valid point.
Yeah.
I do believe that we symbolize you men as, wanting you to be very masculine, yet also wanting you to be able to open your heart. So that must be difficult.
I got to make a buck. How am I going to open my heart if I got to make a buck?
Well, that becomes a challenge because now, we are wanting more conscious relationships and, it's a little bit challenging. I mean, this is kind of what we're looking for. We're wanting this apology because we've all sort of felt it. We've all known what's happened to women in the past, but I hear you, sort of.
Yeah, but, well, not every man has behaved in this manner of which this man is speaking in this here apology.
You don't think?
Not every man, no. I don't feel that I have behaved in such a manner myself, no.
Are you sure?
Yeah, well, I don't think I've behaved any worse to the broads than the broads have behaved to me.
just even
nobody's using... perfect. We're here together on this planet,
This is true, but just even using the term broad is a little bit derogatory, don't you think?
Nobody ever complained till now.
Really? Are you sure?
Not to my face.
Ah. Mm. Well, see, I'm not really at your face. I'm able to do it through the phone.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, enough of him already. I got rid of him. Go smoke a cigar. He's archaic. He's like a dinosaur. It's unbearable already. I can't take it. Let's have a cogent conversation about the apology. People might be listening.
Right. Yes. Yes. So...
But this, Vinny's point is not well taken. Let's not overstate it. But I think that, he's like an old kind of survivalist armored warrior type, and he exists for a reason. And I think that, when we talk about, developing conscious relationship, open-hearted connectiveness, right? I think that we also have to understand, and I think what I was trying to do, not so much consciously, but in the apology, was to kind of contextualize the behavior of the malevolent warrior. Because I think that it's important to apologize for what's not okay, to set a new template of possibility for the future, but also to create a willingness for everyone to look at sociologically what it is that impacts on behavior. Where did this male warrior come from? What was his position sociologically in reality? What role was he assuming in terms of protecting family, village, country, other? And you can see how it isn't that, and I see this in myself, it's not that big a shift from benevolent warrior, that is protector, right, to malevolent warrior. If you're in that warrior tension and pit for too long, you can see how you know, holding rage at the enemy, how it would be very easy to cross over into a really horrific place.
Right.
You know?
And, but, I mean, part of the brilliant part of your book is that you realize during your journey is that you can't actually, nor do you want to, get rid of the warrior, because the warrior is definitely a part of who you are and a part of a lot of people.
And a healthy, I mean, if we define warrior as, say, the in the best possible light, which is the assertive aspect of ourselves, that part which allows us to, let's say, excavate and honor our dreams.
Right.
In the best case scenario, why would we ever want to get rid of that, you know? I mean, for me, the soul-shaping dance, this, it's an art form. It's some wonderful, inextricable, threaded dance between sort of receptivity and assertiveness. I couldn't have written that book if I hadn't been able to assert myself and push my way through economic realities that were I was dealing with at the time. And at the same time, I wouldn't have been able to find, say, some of the new language that came through me in writing that book if I hadn't been able to sit back and open and be more receptive and get into the river, you know?
Yeah.
So to me, that's really just what wholeness is. It's this, the key, though, is to find a way to take that receptivity and that assertive aspect and really move from its most benevolent aspect,
right.
most benevolent framing, right?
Right.
Rather than slipping in the other direction, you know, where receptivity becomes profound weakness, right? And where, you know, intense edginess becomes abusiveness. Like, that's where the problem develops. And it's almost like the New Age movement dissing anger. I mean, this is what ended up happening, you know, that it becomes like a horrible thing to feel this organic emotion called anger. And really, that's because people behave in an inappropriate way with their anger. They mischannel their aggression. But if we pull back from that, there's a wonderful place where anger is an opportunity to express, when it's properly expressed, to restore the integrity of the organism, which is essential to emotional functioning. So it really is about trying to get away from the perversions and bring everything back into play, like in realment, like everything's a part of us, but to figure out how to do it in the right way.
Right. And you know, vulnerability can be a beautiful gift, but we have this incredible fear of vulnerability, because it does mean exposing yourself. It does mean being completely open and receptive to whatever comes to us. And and being that it's not always been a positive experience, or having that energy not always received in a positive way, it can be incredibly difficult.
We have horrible associations with the open heart, and I mean, I think this is cultural, you know, and sociological. We're mostly entrenched still, in my view, in a survivalist structure. That is, that most of the planet is still vibrating around basic needs. Even people who have money, still doesn't take much for them to think it's going to be gone, you know.
Right.
And there isn't that basic love. There hasn't been enough generations of safety on this planet for us to really begin to vibrate at the next levels up in the chakra and move in the direction of the open-hearted way of being. And, you know, I think we're all trapped in that. And I think one of the, you know, if it leaves anybody with anything positive, what I hope for it is that it, when they're interfacing with someone in their life that's closed, for example, then instead of just going to, you're a closed character and you're like impossible, which may absolutely be the truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to at least, you know, if there's a place in that interface for someone to understand where that comes from, historically, sociologically, and in the conditioning, and also see it in its highest light, that is that armored tank may actually have formed in order to protect somebody, as opposed to abuse somebody. And that's not to say it doesn't get perverted and distorted, but, you know, I feel like we need to really understand one another and understand how things are formed, and that we really are all in this together, even though each gender may have been affected in different ways in this barbaric world. I think that that's really the way to move forward, because if it's just, you know, dude, I want you to be more open, without really injecting any degree of insight into the dialogue about where it's all coming from, I don't know that it's going to change anything.
Right. And, you know, there's this piece where, you know, we're always trying to change the other person.
Yeah.
And, you know, truly, I do believe, and I will always, you know, say this, we have to We have to start with ourselves first. I mean, let's face it, if we have a partner or anybody that is closed down, it very likely means that there is an aspect of ourselves that's closed down, or we wouldn't still be there. There wouldn't
Well, it depends what, I mean, I don't think everything's a direct reflection. Sometimes we're there because we have some, you know, somebody's living out a pattern with their unavailable father or mother.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't necessarily mean they are emanating from that place, but they're there for, there's something that's being reflected and worked through. That's absolutely true. You know, Maya Angelou has that great quote, right? When people tell you who they are, believe them, you know? I mean, if we all just got that, we wouldn't waste so much time, you know? I mean, how much time I've wasted trying to get people to behave in a certain way, and how much time they've wasted trying to get me to behave in a certain way, it all just seems absolutely like a waste of time. People either organically move in a certain direction in their growth, or they don't. You plant a few seeds, you know, for the best. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's a big part of the... I think you're right. I mean, we really just have to bring it back to our to ourselves, but you know, we hold on so tight.
Well, we do. And, you know, that deep intimacy that we're looking for, we really still have to start with ourselves. Like, we still have to create that intimacy within ourselves to be able to offer it to someone else.
Right. That's absolutely true. You know, it's so funny. I remember I had this relationship when I was, like, 22, and I was, like, completely, you know, cocky and completely, I mean, I was a little, like, you know,
Vinny?
My buddy Vinny in the other room.
Yeah.
I don't want to bring him back here right now, but... But I was, you know, and I mean, not really that extreme, of course, but I remember, you know, I asked this woman I was involved, why are you still with me? And she said, well, you know, when we make love, you're so beautiful. And it was like, I remember thinking, yeah, but I'm not beautiful 99% of the time, you know. But she clung to that, Lori. She just clung to that as though that wasn't ultimately a direct reflection of who I was. And maybe in the ultimate sense, it really was. But I wasn't going to live there for a very, very long time, and that didn't seem to, she didn't seem to notice that,
right.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a powerful piece. I mean, if you ever get to experience that openness, it's a, you know, it's something that you never really lose, because it's still that gift. I mean, you're still able to do it at a young age. At that time, regardless of how it came about,
right.
It was still being that totally open, vulnerable place.
Yeah, yeah, but both terrifying on a very deep level.
Yeah,
to live there in my waking consciousness, and definitely to an extent incongruent with having to slug it out in the marketplace.
Right.
You know?
Well, you're still
you know, but, you know, I remember after I did this Terry Hunt workshop at the Omega Center in Rhinebeck, and I wrote about it in Soul Shaping, and I did this really profound breath work. I mean, it was like, you know, I visited with my grandfather. I mean, I had like profound experiences, and I remember coming back. Then I had rented a law space just before I'd done that. That was the inner negotiation. I was going to leave law. I wasn't going to leave law. So I rented the space, but then like my warrior within said, okay, you can go do that schmaltzy esoteric workshop at the Omega Center in Rhinebeck. So I did this workshop with Terry Hunt. It was profound. And when I came back, I climbed Mount Hurricane in Lake Placid, and I was, you know, really completely in this open-hearted unity consciousness state that I wasn't very familiar with. And I remember then going back into the courtroom, you know, thinking about practicing and feeling all gooey and goofy and like a Buddhist. All I was just thinking about, like, I was seeing the judge up there in his robes and wondering if he knew why he'd picked this archetypal role in this lifetime. And I was seeing the guy in the defense box thinking, you know, praise and thankfulness and namaste to him for being willing to sacrifice, you know, his freedom in order for all of us to assume our role. I mean, I was in that state of perspective, and it was very obvious that I was going to be a terrible lawyer because it didn't work with the vibration of the culture. So I think a lot of us are in this now with the quest for divine purpose, which is starting to get languished all like on Facebook and around, and which is how do you excavate that purpose and how do you honor that purpose? Because often that purpose brings you into your heart. We know when you're like on the river of essence, that's your way in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to go back out into the world and adjust to a marketplace that is not there yet. And, you know, I mean, I think we're all in that together, and I don't think there are any simple answers.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the next piece, isn't it? Finding that balance within us to allow for it all to play out and find a way to do it while we can be conscious and accept everything that's going on. I mean, that's really a big piece of how we're trying to shift into this next phase.
Right. I think enrealment works for me. You know, I think a lot of the ungrounded, I'm doing this Hallmarks of Ungrounded Spirituality series now. And, you know, I think that one of the problems that I had with it was that it wasn't holding everything at once. It was the bliss trip. It was radical detachment. It was I'm not my pain body. You know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it really didn't seem to be getting me or too many people that I know anywhere at all. And so I think now the movement is in a way, a more courageous movement in the direction of, yeah, like holding everything, inclusivity, right, entirety, and holding everything at once so that my surrendered self and my warrior self sit at the table, and they sit at the table for so long that eventually they both just become woven into me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When I started on this kind of, say, this consciousness journey in my 20s, I couldn't imagine, you know, from my conditioned, egoic male warrior self, that my surrendered or receptive self could both be exist at the same time. I felt like I had to choose the law path or the psychotherapeutic path or whatever. Like, they couldn't all be together. And as time goes by, and you alluded to this before, I'm really realizing that what happened is that they're now both sitting at the table together. They're not fighting anymore. And to do this work in the world, to have this dialogue with you, I need my armor up. You know, I need to be able to throw my weight around in order to take myself seriously, in order to handle the world, in order to handle the attacks that come with the projection that comes with public presence, all of that stuff. And at the same time, remember to stay emanating from my heart in terms of what my ultimate path is.
I mean, you probably were one of the first people I've interviewed where this has come up. But since then, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's almost everybody that I interview are kind of at the same place. Maybe not everybody, but, you know, where it is not that new age bliss, although there are still those people. But, you know, where it's this bit about enrealment. I mean, I think that's a great way of saying it. But, you know, acknowledging the shadow, how the shadow, you know, assists us not only to grow, but, you know, it is us. I mean, that's the whole thing. We've taken so many years to mask ourselves because we think the only way to be loved and accepted for who we are is, you know, if we change and be somebody else. So we've, you know, years and years and years of putting up these masks and trying to be somebody that we're not, because we think that that's the only way people will love us. And to the point where we forget who we are, like we don't really know how to be that person. And I think with women, maybe, I think we both have our own struggles. I think they're very unique in the sexes as to what the struggles are. I think you're talking about the warrior is a big piece for men, but for women, it's, you know, trying not to be that really nice person who, you know, will, you know, because there's this piece where I know, like, you know, you have to love and accept somebody for who they are. Like, stop trying to change them, just accept them for who they are. And
or don't accept them for who they are.
Right.
But at least let them be who they are.
Yes.
Right.
Right. And then, you know, does that mean you let somebody walk all over you? Like, there's this big piece where women kind of really struggle.
Yeah. Struggle with the tendency to placate or to endure it. And then there's
in the name of love.
Yeah, in the name of something called love.
Well, yeah. Yeah, a very distorted version of love.
Yeah.
But that's all we know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can only really comfortably speak about the warrior piece, that struggle, I think the idea that the warrior is just going to look in a particular soldier-like form, I think really has to fade away, because in every man I encounter some aspect of this warrior I wrote from. You know, I think that we carry this, in a positive way, we carry this sense of responsibility forward, and, you know, a lot of the egoic stuff comes from the male being so lodged in the competitive marketplace. You know, I saw it in law. It was so funny that, you know, I'd go to law school with these, some of them were hippies, you know, they were hippies, really smart hippies, and they get into law school, and, you know, dirty, rotten hippies, and then they join the world, and then get out into the law world. world and become lawyers, and then you would notice at third year law school, partway through second, into the early years, quite often you'd encounter these former hippies, heartfelt hippies, and, you know, they were adjusting to the environment, particularly litigators, and, you know, were completely pumped up and egoic, you know. And it was absolutely essential to coping with that environment. Now, they could leave the environment, and maybe that's the ultimate answer, but that's what it was, that archaic structure. So there are so many ways in which society holds us and pulls us back. Even when we have the good sense to pull out of the conditioning, we get just pulled back in by the structures themselves.
You know? What did you see as your, like, what was the most difficult part of it? Because, I mean, clearly we come from different sides of the spectrum, really.
Yeah.
I mean, what was your most difficult? I mean, it seems that, you know, you felt you had to protect yourself against attack, but
how did that
feel for you? Because we were usually the ones that would, you know, try and love unconditionally, although we really put oodles of conditions, just not recognizing them.
So you're asking what was the hardest thing about being lodged in the traditional male warrior state?
Yeah, and wanting to, how did you get from that place to here without?
I think that I had underlying my drivenness, let's say.
But you had a little missy.
Yeah, was a very feeling based part of me. I was a very feeling based child, a very emotional child. You know, tantruming, moving my feelings, expressing my anger, crying a lot in the early years. I shut down in the adolescent years, and I think that's the work I had to do mostly in my 20s was to clear that out. But I had that part, and you know, I would have glimpses of like emptying the vessel, like in that family environment in my early life when I would release all those holdings. And I think that's why I'm relatively sane today, because I did that and didn't let it accumulate. And despite the fact that I got in a whole lot of trouble for being that expressive, but I got a taste of like what it felt like to be in my wholeness through the openness in my heart. And I just felt more alive there. It felt more just true. Whether that's because my soul was at a witnessing stage where it could really make these distinctions, I don't really get it fully. But I just loved what it felt like to be completely receptive.
Okay.
So then I had some template, something to compare these other states to. Like it was like a homecoming. Like it was like, how do I find my way back to that open-heartedness? How do I find my... So that was happening while I had that other part of me that was pulling me in the direction of being the next Eddie Greenspan. I mean, so those were the two extremes that lived inside of me. And even in my law vision of what I was going to do in law, I mean, it had so much benevolence to it in terms of changes I wanted to make in the system and things I wanted to fight for and against. And so it was never really fully, I was never really going to become the hard-ass, heartless litigator. I was going to be a defense lawyer, you know. I was going to, you know, fight for policy changes that reflected the mental health issues that should be incorporated into defense structures and criminal law, and like that kind of, you know, fight the medical system, you know, all that kind of stuff, like fight for the good. It was very Robin Hood, so it always had a measure of heart to it. I think the hardest, the thing that probably was the most difficult thing, or the thing that led me most in the direction of losing that, you know, was probably my relationship with my mother, I would think. Because that was the place in my life where if I absolutely did not armor, I was absolutely going to die. You know, die on a psychic level, die on a spiritual level, die to the possibility that I could make something of this life. And I mean, I think that was really my greatest challenge, you know. Unlike what you just described, my mother was not somebody who was particularly concerned with holding it all in. The negativity was everywhere. Now, mind you, out in the world, when people came over, we all had to put on a show. It wasn't a very good show, but I had a very, very different experience, and my father was much more of a sensitive, contained individual who would have occasional passive-aggressive explosions. And so it was a little bit different.
Okay. To write your journey was one thing, but why the apologies? Like, what...
Yeah.
It's so open, and so, like, why did you feel you needed to apologize?
Well, some of it is me, you know.
Yeah.
I for ex-girlfriends, like, I've written apology letters to anyone, like, as I kind of got more, slightly more evolved as I went along, you know, I did my best to clean up anything from the past interactively, and I don't know why that came through me. I don't know. I mean, I feel as though something happened to me, you know, in the love relationship that I wrote about in the book, and then in my relationship with my grandmother after my grandfather died, where I just began to see the open-hearted feminine as the courageous path. Not that the benevolent male warrior's path isn't courageous in a different way, but there was just something about seeing her sitting there holding her heart open to the family madness in the way that she did and being so connected to other, and that just seems so damn difficult and profound, and never given credit for, you know, never ever given credit. I mean, that's what it was. It was that, and it was so forward moving for me and so soothing for me in my life. And, you know, every time she would tickle my back, it was like validating, and I wasn't getting any validation from my parents at all. And, you know, it was like, it was chicken soup for the soul, you know. This is not a infomercial for a Jack Canfield book, but but really that's what it was. And I just began to see that with new eyes over time. And so when I started International Year of the Woman, I remember feeling like, oh God, I don't want to put this group out there because it looks almost like a marketing move. Like, I'm going to market myself to the women, like all that stuff. So I didn't do it for a long time because of that. And then it was like this message or this calling to champion the receptive feminine is so deep in me now that it just, I just let it come now. And, you know, the apology was just the next step on that journey of expression. You know?
Now, since this, you've done two YouTube videos. Now, you did a really cute parody on New Age sex.
Yeah, I'm going to write a sequel to that one. Get a little rest in me. Yeah, that was really popular, that one. Over 6,000 people watched that. It was, like, funny. Yeah.
Wow.
It was disembodied sex between basically a male automaton who'd been reading too many, I won't mention any names, mm-hmm. authors' books, and his poor girlfriend. And that's on the Soul Shaping channel on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah,
it's the chafing. It's called The Challenges of Sex Without a Body in the New Age. Yeah. Doesn't work out all that well, does it?
No, well.
It's confusing.
And that's the whole thing. I mean, it's so amazing how there's still a lot out there that, you know, really teach us to, you know, detach from our feelings and, you know, change our thoughts and, you know, not, you know, to completely detach and to not be attached to any need. And that's...
Yeah, to, like, attachment and desire are the problem or some nonsense like that. As opposed to distinguishing healthy and unhealthy attachment or healthy and unhealthy ego, or there's no distinctions, you know, made. Those judging structures, it's interesting, they disparage duality, but yet they seem to lodge themselves in dualistic judgments quite comfortably. You know, really, I think we have to honor our ability to detach from this barbaric world. Like, I don't want to ever diss it so much that I don't understand the importance of that. Well, people under horrible circumstances need to have mechanisms to get out of that pain body, whether it's a meditation mechanism, a dissociative mechanism, that keeps people alive. But at some point we have to come back down, because we need someone to come home to, you know. And I really firmly believe that the emotional body really is indistinguishable from our spiritual expansion. I don't know how you grow in your spirituality except in relation to how you interface with your material. So if you detach from it, it just stays there. You know, it's the power of then. You basically get frozen at that stage in your developmental consciousness, and then you can't really develop spiritually. You know, the most spiritual expansion I've experienced is when I worked through emotional material and converted it to the lessons it inherently contained. And that's very different from the trip out of the pain body routine. Usually people who are putting that forth, when they talk about it, you can tell they're not even in their bodies. You know, they're like automatons. And that's not my idea of spirituality. My idea of spirituality really comes through the heart and the alive and vital body. What Alexander Lowen wrote about in bioenergetics, which is, you know, for him it was not complicated. You enlivened the body, you cleared the blocks, you moved the material, you found your expression, and you became naturally spirited. That's what he said, you know. Mm-hmm. It was that simple. It all came through the body for him, and I think that makes a whole lot of sense to me, too.
Well, otherwise, why would we be on this planet?
Like, well, I guess because, because God made a mistake.
But
we're smart enough to realize that God made a mistake. It's absolutely arrogant to suggest that all of this that we are is misidentified. That is a disease of the modern life, because we're so bloody overstimulated that we want to grab onto anything like change your thinking that's going to change the whole. I mean, you can't change your thinking if you don't change your relationship to your emotional body. The thoughts are just reflective of the way you're living in your emotional body. It's not the other way around, you know, not when it comes to seriously deep stuff. And but, you know, these ideas, the idea that you can just get into the now by somehow detaching from the pain, all of that, these are just mechanisms. They're pathways of self-avoidance that are being presented as enlightenment models. And, you know, they really don't work. They can't work. They can only work for a period of time, because at some point we've still got to come back down to earth, you know. Because, you know, we know what happens. I mean, we see it. I was on the West Coast. You know, how many seemingly enlightened people were living out of their cars and couldn't pay their rent and were beating each other up in relationship. And, you know, it just wasn't true. I mean, that's really what it was. It just wasn't true.
Well, yeah, because we're not being grounded and we're not real and we're not in our body, and therefore how can you do anything?
Yeah, how can you be in the now if you're not here?
And how can you have an open heart if you're not here?
Yeah, exactly. Well, because what happens is the now becomes a cerebral construct. It becomes a male paternalistic meditation cushion path, not a relational path, as women would encourage us in the direction of, right? No, really. Yeah. I mean, that's what Wilbur was criticized for a while. And I think that really there's a lot of truth to it. As opposed to a model that's relational, that is that you get into the now through the opening of the heart, which is often a relational experience. And that's very different. And to me, that's the model. And it is a more typically feminine model that really is the direction this planet has to go. The other direction, that let's get out of our body, let's get out, stop taking dynamics so seriously, let's have something called conscious relationship that exists independent of our fundamental emotional material. Let's not convert our emotional material into the, you know, I say in soul shaping, repressed emotions or unactualized spiritual lessons. I don't know how else to do it. So if we're going to like talk about the emotions not being true, not being real, all being just our story, like some kind of disembodied shtick or something like that, how are we going to have conscious relationship? Who's interfacing with who? You know, you become like that video, the challenges of having sex in, you know, without a body in the new age. There's just nobody home, and if there's nobody home, there's no way to bridge to anybody else.
And that's the key, isn't it? I mean, it's not only finding the bridge to ourselves, because, I mean, that has to happen, and there's only two ways of doing it. It's by bridging with another, which we, you know, we grapple with. We try and do that throughout our life and hope that it brings us back into ourselves. Or we create the bridge first within ourselves. And, you know, they're both equally important bridges. And, you know, what comes first? Personally, I think it has to happen within first, but...
It does, but so much of this dance is relational. So, I mean, I agree with you. You have to reach a certain stage developmentally within your internal world before you can really relate to another human. I mean, I feel like we are primarily still at the individual stage of human development, where it's all we can do is to sort ourselves out as a separate entity before we even begin to talk about healthy conscious relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Not just sort of heady conscious relationship, which is silly. But at the same time, we do learn our lessons relationally. We do impact one another. And I think it depends on the person's callings and soul scriptures. Some people's soul scriptures are fundamentally more separate or distinct, more isolationist. And others really are much more about having children and doing it through that way of being. And, you know, I always try to be sensitive to that. And for a lot of, there are individuals who grow much more individually through their way of participating in dynamics. But I think what you say is also true. You have to reach a certain stage, for the most part, before you can begin to undertake that and create that bridge properly, for sure. Like, you know, for me, like at 22, I mean, if you imagine, you know, if I imagine myself at 22 trying to have an adult relationship where I could, like, talk about what's triggering me, I mean, that's insane. I was completely controlled by my triggers, right? I mean, how am I going to have a conversation? I didn't even know what a trigger was, you know? I mean, I was trigger unhappy, that was for sure, but at the same time, I couldn't name it, you know. I didn't understand it. It was all that I knew. It was all just like living out the patterns from early life and never really crafting a different way of being. And so for sure, that would have been an impossible time. I'm interested, I mean, you read the apology. I'm interested in what your response to it was.
Well,
if you're open to talking about
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I mean, when I originally read it quite a while ago, and then I watched your videos, it's very similar to your book. I mean, it's just this very open, I mean, it's just like, oh, this is so Jeff, because it's just this very open expression of who you are. And you know, when you read it, it really gives you hope that, you know, one, we're not completely crazy. You know, that we, you know, there's reason why we want to be this open-hearted, very vulnerable place. And it, you know, it's like being understood for one of the first times in your life, you know, because it's...
So you felt understood?
Yeah.
Right, like seen or something?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's very rare that can happen through a male perspective, and it's not, you know, it's not impossible, and it's certainly, but it definitely gives you hope, and you know that if one male can do this, that means there's this crack that's occurred, regardless of, you know, how many people. It means a crack has happened, which means that more and more of this type of expression has like room has been made for it.
Right. Yeah, like, you know, the response to, I mean, you know, I had no idea when I wrote it. You don't know. You just put it out there, you know. And mm-hmm. It did, based on the intensity of the response, I mean, it was startling to me. I mean, I'd have to get away from the computer. I couldn't take it. It was so intense. And so definitely there was an absolute hunger from the perspective of women to feel seen.
Yeah.
You know, and of course still is. I mean, this is just one little thing. It's a tiny drop in the greater ocean. But that was for sure true. And men at first, they weren't there. You know, if you look at the list even on Facebook, there were thousands of like on this no responses. And there weren't a lot of men, you know. But now there have been more. And not so much there, but in my emails. And so there are men out there that are, and some have written me that they actually felt relieved by this because they have felt this way and never really known how to express it. I mean, that's really all it was expressing something that others wanted to hear and others needed to express, right?
Right.
And because you know, I even remember in the old days when I was in my the worst of my ways of being, where I was more aligned with the malevolent warrior. And really, and more exploitative in relationship and all that. I remember feeling like I did have this witness observer sometimes that was like I would be like intimate with a woman that I was involved with, and I remember feeling like, and she was doing like what women did at 22, which is to try to please the man rather than pleasing themselves. Right?
It was all about control.
You had the selfish guy, and then you had the unselfish woman. And that was the dynamic, and I loved that dynamic. I fed off that dynamic. Oh, I did. I absolutely did. I sought it out. I could, you know, like a missile, I could find them.
But it was also about control. Don't misinterpret women as...
Right. Oh, well, now Vinny would agree with you about that. But we don't... He's not even finished the cigar yet. But but I remember feeling like I remember having this part of me, and I wonder if other men have had this too, where they're in the intimate embrace with the woman who's not there for her own sexual reasons. And... thinking to myself, this is kind of like sex assault in a way. Mm. Not literally, of course, but in the sense that I didn't know if she was there for a really truly volitional reason. Maybe I didn't really understand why she was there, but it seemed almost as though it was like some role or obligation as opposed to something she was enjoying, you know? And I had that awareness.
In your 20s?
In my 20s. Yeah. Sometimes I had that awareness. So, and other men, you know, based on the things that I've received in the last few months, you know, not specifically that, but really this idea that other men recognize themselves in this apology suggests that there is a real chink, you know, there is a chink in, not a real chink in there, but there is some kind of a little chink in the armor, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, that was what it was about in our 20s. I mean, women, it wasn't about pleasure. We were too, it was really trying to create that, you know, physical
bond.
Connection, that
yeah.
bond that we didn't really yeah. understand,
yeah.
and reeling you in, like trying to do what we thought would be what you wanted so that we could have ultimate control, so that it would lead to what we wanted.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I saw it, I you know, what do I know, but I really saw it much more as this deep longing to be bonded.
I think we all have that deep longing, though. I don't think that's necessarily... I mean, I think we all truly want to be loved. I mean, I think whatever has happened in the religious culture that has deviated from, you know, relationships and how they've deviated so off kilter. I mean, you know, I think honestly, that's what we all crave for. But in our 20s, we're not consciously aware of that.
Right. Just living out stuff. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm amazed now that I survived my 20s. I talk to these people, you know, they come to me in Soul Shape and you're in their 20s and letting me know where they're at. And I go, oh, God, how will you survive? I mean, I can't even believe it.
Yeah. But also while reading the apologies, I mean, I was able to accept it also within my own journey. I mean, because I don't believe that anything you wrote there is specifically male gender based. I mean, there's an overview possibly, but we've all done all of these things that you wrote about in different ways.
Right.
So being able to identify even ourselves with, you know, if it is, you know, having that very masculine energy, then it's seeing ourselves as that vulnerable person that allowed that to happen. So in one way, you know, we see both spectrums of how this has impacted my life, but also and the games I played to make love the way it was for me, but also, you know, how it contributed to being who I was and being both the receiver and the giver, being able to see both sides of this apology, because it's so much deeper than just it's this expansive, deep search inward.
Right. Right. Got it. Yeah. I mean, there's fragments of it. I think that's true for everybody.
Yeah.
To a different degree. Absolutely. But I don't at the same time want to de-emphasize the gender messaging piece of it, you know, because I think that there's, you know, really the primary thrust of it was from the male.
Yeah.
Primarily the male malevolent warrior to those that have been damaged.
Yeah. But let's face it, if we grew up in any time, you know, in the last 100 years, we've all had to deal with that masculine warrior. We've all had aspects of that to survive on this planet.
Yeah,
we had
absolutely.
To.
Yeah, I mean, our armor is essential for both genders.
Yeah.
That's absolutely for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ultimately, if the work that I'm trying to do or that's coming through me is ultimately in the hope of helping to support the creation of reality, really, where we can be, you know, sturdy but open, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, ascending with both feet on the ground. You know, I used to think Bambi was like the vision of, but it's really not that, because that's a little too fragile, I think. I think humans are built to be not quite that fragile. But like sturdy but really open, like really holding on to the open heart, you know, as this gateway to the moment, not the mind trip, you know, not the detachment trip, but the heart, and a reality where everybody is safe enough to open the heart. Because, you know, whenever I opened my heart and cleared emotional material out, what always came through me was my divine purpose, was real clarified visions of what my work was to do in this lifetime. So it's not just some amorphous, I mean, it's all intertwined.
Yeah.
With the divine like that. And so the more that we can invite a reality where we're peeling away armor and moving from our heart outward, I think the more aligned we're going to be with finding a real path, you know, the soul scriptures each of us came in here to embody.
Well, yeah, because if we believe what I believe, which is the soul is within our heart, that's our way of
yeah.
making that deeper
yeah.
connection. If you can't get there, You know, and we, that's, you know, that's common to both sexes. That's, I think, you know, probably one of our biggest problems is learning to be that vulnerable. Now, the fragility part is an interesting concept because, you know, yeah, we need to be strong and yet as soft as butter. Like, there's that duality.
Well, that's it. Well, that's, yeah, that's exactly it. And but strong not as an armored.
Right.
Strong as in vital.
Yeah.
You know, if I imagine kind of, you know, my vision of the of whole human, which is something I used to always think about, you know, he's not, walking around, or she's not walking around with their head kind of hanging over, talking very softly, not a lot of vitality coming through the body or the eyes, you know, in that kind of guru-like form, which we've seen, but really is just spirited, you know, feet on the ground, energized, heart open, positive, present. Can handle everything, can handle the good, can handle the shadow, is not afraid of all aspects of reality, able to move their feelings in and out like that, boundaried but not so boundaried as to be armored, you know, but at the same time not so malleable and open that there's nobody to come home to, like knowing where you end and the other begins, but and at the same time holding unity perfectly. And that's my vision, and it starts with your feet sturdily on the ground. Everything the bioenergetics people wrote about was bang on, I think, and getting so solid and cleared out that really, you know, your heart is open, but you're an adult, you're formed, you know, you have a sense of your autonomy, you know, and also your capacity for connectiveness, you know. To me, that's the vision of possibility that I think soul shaping embodies, just in the way that the journey was presented. And I think it really is a, you know, it's like people talk about don't gossip about other spiritual teachers, don't chastise other models, and it's like at the end of the day when we get rid of all the religiosity and all of the political differences and all the nations and all that, we're going to be left with the models of consciousness. And really there's nothing more important to discuss and debate, which is how do we settle into our physical form and interface with reality. These things are worth debating, you know, and talking about really openly, because quite often models become super popular that are super dangerous, and they create a whole cadre of automatons walking through the world and affecting realities in various ways. And so I think we should just start painting our picture of possibility of what does a whole human look like, you know? I mean, really talk about it openly, and then we'll know what we're striving for.
Well, and that is the dance, isn't it? I mean, it is learning how to be completely, like, it's, you know, we talk about mind, spirit, body, but we rarely actually exist in all three or all four at the same time, or all seven or 12 or
right.
however many it's been defined as.
And right.
We spend so much of our time in our heads. I mean, everything is mentalized first.
Right. Right. Because we have survived by our wits in this barbaric world. Right. And we're not going to drop down from our minds until we start, it starts getting safer. On the earth plane, you know, and that's why things like rule of law and, you know, changes in political systems in the direction of more democratic structures, all that stuff is so important to creating a safer environment, you know, because then we'll come down, it's all connected, then we'll come down from our head and start moving more outward from our hearts. But the models that talk about thinking, changing your thinking, they're really, all they're doing is pulling us back into this head trip, you know.
Yeah.
And I know, I think you interviewed Phil Shepard, didn't you?
I did.
Who wrote New Self,
New World.
And he really writes about, brilliant man, and he writes really about a model, an embodied model of moving from the kishkas, like from the brain and the belly outward. And I think he's really moving us in the right direction with that work.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it definitely is the step that we have to all embrace. I mean, if we don't, we won't move in that direction. But I think certainly it's more than begun, because I think there's a lot of people out there, including yourself and Philip, and just, you know, a host of people that I have connected with that do feel this way, and know that, you know, if we're not in our bodies, if we're not, you know, enjoying the juiciness of life, the richness of our emotional bodies, that, I mean, it's all... I mean, how can we be interconnected? How can we know we're not separate if we can't even...
we don't even know we have toes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we'll never get
because
there.
We're corrupting the design, right?
Yeah.
We're corrupting the natural flow of things. Absolutely. That's it. And so now is a really key moment, because we are starting to embrace, and people are frustrated with disembodied spiritual bypass models. They just are. They're just not effective. You know, how many people, we all know people who jumped, I'm going to find my path, I found my calling, I'm going to be a poet, and then they like abandon ship and quit their jobs and things fall apart, you know. I mean, it really is about moving in the direction. Spirituality for me just means reality. The most spiritual person is the one who is living in the greatest, say, number, to just make it quantified for a moment, aspects of reality at one time, you know. I mean, that is enrealment. It's that we're, it's all happening. I'm anxious about the mortgage, and I'm still trying, finding a way to tap into the unity consciousness field. It's both, it's all happening at the same time, instead of just tapping into the parts that feel good, which was a necessary mechanism to deal with the madness of the world, but is not the ultimate path home.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's necessary, but yeah. And we can't say it enough. I mean, it really...
No, we can't. It really needs to be, we should be screaming it from the mountaintop and in the subways.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. You do that, though. Or get Vinny.
I may. Yeah. We'll see what happens. Vinny. Maybe I'll send Vinny out. Yeah, it's unfortunate we couldn't have spent more time with him tonight. He's feeling... He said something to me before, something about how he's selective about who he interacts with. He's practicing the art of selective attachment, so he read one page in my book at least.
Oh, good, yeah.
We'll get him back another time.
Maybe we can, you know, talk about the New Age sex.
Yeah.
I'm sure he would like that.
Yeah, well, he agreed with me about that video. He understood that was something called a satire, Jeff.
Ah.
He understood that.
Yes. I think there might have been a few people offended, but, you know...
Well, that's part of, you know, I feel as though that's part of it, is a part of my work now, is I'm getting more offensive and less political, and, you know, it means that attack comes, and I just have to be really clear that I'm coming from the right place in terms of my messaging, you know.
All about intention, right?
That's it. That's all. That's all. You can't be responsible for the rest of it. I've learned that in this trip the last 3 years, really. You know, you can do so many things right, but... Somebody can look at you one way and you don't email them back and they hate you. And I mean, you know, you can't control for that. You just keep coming back to where your source spring is, you know, and that's, you know, that's hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I honor and applaud you for opening up this whole area because, I mean, women, we all know that the divine feminine has to re-enter this world in a very strong way.
Absolutely,
to find
right.
any balance.
Oh, please, God, absolutely. run our political systems. I will vote for you anytime. And I really mean that.
Yeah.
Enough is enough.
Yeah.
Really, enough is enough. Yeah. Enough is enough. May the next president of the United States be a woman.
Well, may it be a feminine woman. There was a woman that ran that I
won't. No, I won't touch that.
No. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting question: is how feminine the woman can be, and be able to maneuver through that paternalistic structure and rise into power. I mean, that's so complicated.
But we have to. We have to find that way.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's ultimately right. Yeah.
So, you left us with hope, and you gave us that, you know, that space to understand, one, the interconnectedness of the Divine Mother and how she fills all of us, and how important that all is to our evolution and our growth.
Absolutely. We got to honor the Mother. I mean, the Big Mother.
Yes.
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, you know, I like to think that it was hopeful, but I also always aware, and I never forget that we just have so much work. We have so much work to do. And so we push out our divine purpose, we honor it, and then we go to sleep and wake up and do it again.
Yeah.
Because there's so much to be done.
It's true.
To create the world as it ought to be, the world of possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a lot to go, but at least we're being more open and honest about.
Yeah. I think I really truly believe this sort of self-admission path, this letting it all hang out. This is like, this is what it is. Let's just stop pretending is the way home. It really is the way home, because it gives other people permission to self-reveal, and then everything shifts and everything changes, you know?
Okay. Well, it's always a pleasure interviewing you, Jeff, and I will have you back, as I always will. But is there anything that's happening or anything? I guess, you know, just go to his website.
Yeah,
so
there's always things happening. Yeah. Things come and things happen. Lots of things. Yeah.
So go to your website?
Yeah, please go to my website. There's some workshops I'm doing in February and October, and I think I'm going to start doing some others, too, people are talking to me about. And I'll have a number of different e-books I'm going to be putting together.
Nice.
Exercise books, different things on the site, all that. You know.
Which is soulshaping.com.
Soulshaping.com. You got it.
And Soulshaping is your fan page on Facebook?
Facebook.com/soulshaping. But if you go on the upper right of the website, it links into all those pages and groups and so forth.
Perfect. And we'll link this page or this interview with the actual article so people can read it if they haven't already done so.
Oh, great. Yeah, and there's also two YouTube videos on my Soul Shaping channel, one which can be reached on my website again, which is related to the apology.
Nice.
Really beautiful. Yeah.
Nice. Very beautiful. So thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Laura.
All right.
Always a pleasure.
Always.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.